Church Triangle Park. I love Durham. It's got this energy of an up-and-coming town with a couple hundred thousand people living here and a restaurant that makes the best chicken and waffles this side of the Mississippi. Seriously. Durham is also the setting of one of the best sports movies ever made.
I want you to throw the next one at the mascot.
Why? I'm finally throwing it where I want to throw it.
Just throw it at the bull, huh? Trust me.
Bull Durham is a baseball movie. It's really about a lot of other things.
Christmas Eve, and I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days.
Here in Durham, we're going to tell sports stories, too. Stories that are also about a lot of other things. In particular, about young people and the American dream. Sports often play a huge role in the aspirations of kids and their parents. Producer John Bewin brought us this idea. So, John, you've lived in Durham for more than a dozen years, working and teaching at Duke. Why sports? Are you a sports nut?
Well, yeah, okay. I kind of love sports. I grew up, you know, the son of a basketball coach, and I was a small-time athlete a long time ago. I pretty much am a fan.
No, me too. I mean, I love sports. When I was a kid, I wanted to be Reggie Jackson, Muhammad Ali, and Dr. J all at the same time. But I can't play anything. Basketball, no. Football, too skinny. At baseball, I was so bad in the Little League games that my mother stopped coming to the games.
Ouch.
Yeah, seriously. That being said, I love sports. I get all caught up in it.
But you know, the news media look at sports in a certain way most of the time, right? Who won, who lost, who's the greatest player. I wanted to take a different kind of look. I'm fascinated by sports as a force in our society and our culture.
I think sports are such a big deal for Americans that we might not stop to notice, right? I mean, sports are part of the water we swim in.
I've talked to scholars who make a pretty good case that the U.S. in the 21st century is the most sports-obsessed society in human history. Sports are a $500 billion-a-year industry, according to some estimates, counting ticket sales, sports equipment, the stadiums we build at public expense. The most highly valued and expensive cable channel is ESPN. If you think about it, if you go into a bar or restaurant now, and I'm not just talking about sports bars, any bar or restaurant, you'll typically see screens all over them showing what? Sports. And if you don't care about sports as a spectator phenomenon, big time sports, well, the majority of American children, boys and girls, now take part in organized sports at some point in their lives.
And that's what we're going to focus on in this hour. Young people. For almost a year, John, you've been following some kids and their families here in Durham, and we're going to hear those stories.
Yep.
But first, we're going to start on a basketball court at Duke University, which is fitting in this area that is obsessed with college basketball. But on this court, the legendary Coach K and the Duke Blue Devils are nowhere in sight.
Right. This is a pickup game at the Rec Center on Duke's main campus. These are regular mortals, a bunch of Duke employees who come together every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at noon.
It's actually fun to watch because they're going full force. See a lot of different guys of different age ranges. I mean, I'd say maybe the youngest is like in his late 20s. And there's a couple older guys out there that's got to be, I don't know, they got to be in their like 70s maybe.
And for anybody who's paying attention or interested in such things, the racial makeup of the game?
You know, it's pretty mixed. It's like, you know, there's like, what, five white guys? And like, you know, it's hard to tell with like everybody wearing gym clothes, but it feels like, I should say, like people are coming from a lot of different economic backgrounds.
Who's on our team? Joe. So us five right here?
Well, I'm Randy Jackson. I work for the Duke Police Department here on campus.
So I'm Peter Fever. I'm a professor of political science.
Bradley Middleton. I actually took off earlier today just to be out here.
What do you do here?
I work at grounds, landscaping, yeah.
I mean, you got the whole microcosm of the university out here, from housekeepers to tenured professors.
It's so interesting to me that, like, the cross-section, like, people from all walks of life just end up here on this court.
All over the world, too. We have international players. We have good old Southerners. We have Latinos. We have men, women.
You're a basketball player once you come between this squared line. You a basketball player.
I'm telling you, there aren't many institutions at Duke that level the playing field that quite like this one does across the class boundaries and other boundaries that separate us in society outside. This is pretty special.
They do play with passion. And John, that pickup game kind of represents some of the best things that people associate with sports, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, we like to think sports bring people together, literally, physically together, to do something fun and healthy.
And for fans, spectator sports bring communities together to root for their teams.
I like to say that sports are like the weather. They give people something to talk about, even if they don't have much else in common. And you can see that every day here in Durham. I mean, checkout line at the grocery store, the barber shop. What is the currency of everyday chatter? Very often, it's sports. But if you think about it, sports can divide us, too.
Right here in the Triangle is one of the most intense rivalries in American sports between Duke in Durham and the University of North Carolina, the Tar Heels, right next door in Chapel Hill. At that noontime basketball game, we talked to Randy Jackson, the Duke University cop we heard from a minute ago. Now, he is a lifelong Durham guy, and he roots for his hometown team.
College basketball, Duke University.
So you don't like the Tar Heels, huh?
I despise the Tar Heels.
You despise them?
Despise the Tar Heels. Even though I have met Tar Heels along the way here and there at barbershops, and they're nice guys, and you get along with them.
But they're still Tar Heels.
But they're still Tar Heels. At the end of the day, I'm rooting against them.
So where would you draw the line? Could you imagine, could you marry a Tar Heel?
Woo! There would have to be a lot of pluses in a lot of other areas. There would have to be a lot of pluses, because that somebody's not going to be happy at the end of the day. And I can pretty much rub it in with the best of them.
Okay, so sports don't always bring people together. And maybe some of the other things we like to believe about sports aren't quite so straightforward either. Like, sports are true meritocracy. A level playing field. Whatever your background, if you're the fastest runner or the best player, you can get the scholarship and make it big time, right? Well, John, let's meet one of the families you've been hanging out with.
Okay. This is a working class part of East Durham, and I'm showing up at Latoya Taylor's house.
Come on in.
By this time, I've been following Latoya and her sons for a few months.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
Hi. Come on in. Shut the door.
It's January, NFL playoff season.
All right, Panthers, let's go.
Latoya is pulling for the Carolina Panthers, the team based in Charlotte. Her 12-year-old son, Gianni, is on the couch next to her, rooting more quietly for the other team, the 49ers.
Stop them! Don't let them in there!
Yes!
No good. Told you, no good. No good. You know why he's pulling for them? Because I love the Panthers. That's my little competition right there.
Latoya says most weekends during football season, you'll find her family watching both pro and college games. She's 36, a full-time certified nursing assistant. She's paying for her small house on a rent-to-own plan.
We're grateful to God that we have somewhere to live. I have two adopted kids and three children of my own by myself. So we're doing pretty good for just to be me as being the parent. Could be worse. So we thank God for the blessings. And that is Zeus, our little parakeet.
Latoya's pride in her family is obvious. There are the teenagers, her adopted niece and nephew, Shantiria and Jaquantre, and her three biological sons, the fifth grader, Gianni, or G for short, Jelani, or JT, who is six, and the baby, Kamani. Latoya has pinned photos and certificates on her living room walls.
And this is G and JT when they were babies. This belongs to JT from kindergarten. And this is my daughter's eighth grade completion. This is Gianni's fifth grade completion and Jelani's kindergarten completion.
At one point, Gianni's little brother, JT, climbs up off the floor and snuggles next to his big brother on the couch.
How do these guys get along?
This one worships this one. And this one worships this one, so I think they get along pretty well.
Yes.
Nope. More of this one worshiping that one.
Asked about his favorite football team, little Jelani surprises his mom. It's not a team he sees on TV.
The Eagles?
Oh, the Durham Eagles are your favorite football team?
The G played for them.
Did you hear that? They're his favorite team because his big brother plays for them. Wow. He loves his big brother.
Al, both brothers play rec football for a Pop Warner program called the Durham Eagles.
We're going to hear more about the Eagles later in the show, right?
Yes, and about the sacrifices LaToya makes so her sons can play football and chase their dreams. Gianni, the 12-year-old, is a good student who loves to watch Bill Nye, the science guy. He sometimes talks of being an astronaut. But this day, when I ask what he wants to do, he answers with his eyes on the TV.
Probably into sports, more into sports. Anything that'll pay good money. I don't want a job I don't like, and I have to live with it for the rest of my life. So it'll probably either be basketball or football, mostly football.
Gianni's mom has her eyes open about the chances of any one kid striking it rich as a big-time athlete. But she has her own reasons for thinking it's crucially important to get her sons involved in sports. To make that happen, she gives a lot of her spare time and spends money till it hurts.
We're also going to meet another family that's doing the same thing, right?
Yes, the Schmidts. Like LaToya, they're making big sacrifices for their son's athletic pursuits. But what LaToya and the Schmidts are able to do for their kids are very different matters.
I mean, there have been plenty of nights when I've questioned, why in the world am I spending this amount of money to do this set of things?
That's ahead on State of the Reunion.
Support comes from Body Work Associates, offering professional, licensed massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. Two locations, including inside the Activities and Recreation Center, north of Memorial Stadium on the U of I campus, and on Windsor Road in Champaign. More information is at bodyworkassociates.com.
This week on This American Life, Mandy's mother-in-law has Alzheimer's, and sometimes she sees things that aren't there, like monkeys out the window. The family used to argue with her and say, you know, there aren't any monkeys. And then they learned she did better if they just played along. Said things like,
it's pretty early in the season for monkeys.
Or,
if you see one again, we should try and capture it to have in the house.
Using improv skills with your aging parents this week.
Saturdays at noon on AM 580.
You're listening to State of the Reunion. I'm Al Letson, and we're in Durham, North Carolina, with guest producer John Bewin, who runs the audio program at the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University. Along with our customary focus on one place, we also have a theme for this episode in Durham, sports. John has been working for months on several stories about young people and their families, and the role that sports sometimes play as kids chase success and the American dream. John, what's next?
Well, we just met LaToya Taylor and her kids in East Durham. We're going to hear a lot more from them later. But first, I'd like you to meet the Schmidts. They live across town from LaToya in a leafy, pretty well-off part of southwest Durham called Hope Valley.
Come on in. Great bird out there.
Mark Schmidt is a former IBM executive who now heads up another business in Research Triangle Park.
I run a small LED lighting company that focuses on government contracts.
Gotcha.
So he's got to have,
Mark and his wife Holly are having dinner on a weeknight with their son Thomas, the youngest of two kids and the last one at home. Thomas is 17, a high school senior.
So what were you all practicing today? Anything for the game for Friday night?
Working on moving the ball around.
Mm-hmm.
Where they, it was just in our offense, like a 2-3-1.
Mm-hmm.
Just no other crease there.
You know, John, you told us to be normal and pretend you weren't here while you were taping. And the truth is, our family does talk about lacrosse all the time.
Lacrosse is the family preoccupation because it's Thomas's passion. He's one of the best high school players in the state of North Carolina.
So Thomas, in playing the sport, like, was there a moment where you just felt like, this is it, like, this is my sport?
When I started playing, I was probably in sixth grade, fifth grade, and it was really fun. I got to chase my friends around and hit them with lacrosse sticks. It was mostly just child fun. And then going into high school, definitely. I mean, I definitely started to excel. That was definitely when I kind of, like, separated from the pack, was my first couple years of high school.
Thomas's emergence as an outstanding lacrosse player didn't just happen.
Tuesday morning, July 2nd, at the Duke University campus outside the Murray Athletic Building.
So, what time of day is it, and what's going on here?
It's 6:15 in the morning, and we're going to work out.
Hi. Alex Merrill, sports performance coach, Duke University. I work with track and field, wrestling, and men's and women's golf here, and then I do a lot of stuff on the side with elite-level high school athletes.
All right, can you get loose?
I've been working with Thomas for about 3 years now. I started with him when he was about 14 years old. Since then, obviously, he's developed into a much different athlete than he was when we started. Now Thomas is an over 300-pound squatter. You don't see too many kids his age that can squat that type of weight and move the way he does. So his strength has really led him to be a great face-off guy, and you know, we've seen that through some of the accolades that he's taken down. So
face-offs happen several times in every lacrosse game. One player from each team squats at the center of the field, then they lunge and fight for the ball. It's an important job that takes technique, quick hands, and strength. Thomas is exceptionally good at it.
Drive through it. Yep. Nice. Set.
There's no doubt in Thomas's mind that his work in the gym is key to his success.
One, it's the confidence to be able to go out and play because you know that you're one of the stronger guys in the field. And so that helps because I'm not one of the fastest guys, so I have to have something. So that's what I have. And so, I mean, I wouldn't be the same player, and I'm not the same athlete.
Since before his freshman year in high school, Thomas has worked out with Alex Merrill from 1 to 3 times a week, year-round. Hundreds of times altogether.
You know, this is a big commitment on Thomas's end, as well as his parents, you know, financially to work with me, coming in at...
The cost? I asked Mark, Thomas's dad.
It's $40 an hour, so probably should be $80.
Oh, boy. Hold on. Good job. Grab a sip, take a minute, then we'll head over for Dumb Dollar.
Personal strength coach is just one of the investments that Thomas's parents have made in his lacrosse career. Sure, they've paid for the off-season traveling teams that cost maybe a few thousand a season if you count equipment and travel costs for the family. As Thomas excelled, his dad got him invited to recruiting camps in other states, events that put the best young players in front of top college coaches. Those camps aren't free. In the off-season of his last 2 years in high school, Thomas and his parents flew to Boston every weekend from North Carolina so he could play for a team based in New England. The team is run by a company called 3D Lacrosse, which develops and promotes players to colleges for a fee.
I mean, there have been plenty of nights when I've questioned, why in the world am I spending this amount of money to do this set of things?
I asked Mark if he's ever done the math.
I'm not going to add it up. It's just not worth it. I mean, that's not the point.
Would it be okay if I just speculated that it's 6 figures?
You know, I don't know that it's that much.
No, I don't think it's that much.
It could be, but I don't know that it's that much.
This is something Thomas was passionate about and still is passionate about. And I think if he'd not been willing to work so hard, it would not have been something that we pursued at this level. But it's not a sacrifice as a parent. You know, Thomas is 17. We probably spent 30 hotel nights last summer together. We had great experiences in whatever city we were in. That's time that we'll never have again.
We want to create an opportunity for our children to experience this essence of achievement, of excellence, that connects the dots between work and results. And that, to me, is something that's priceless.
John, that last point by Mark Schmidt is a very familiar one. The idea that sports build character in kids. Hard work, self-discipline, teamwork.
Yes, parents talk about that regardless of where they're coming from financially or culturally.
Which takes us back to the family we met earlier. We'll hear more from the Schmidts and find out how Thomas's quest for college lacrosse scholarship turned out. Let's pick up the story of Latoya Taylor, the single mom from East Durham. As we heard, she's a low-wage worker, a certified nursing assistant. Two of her young sons play in the local Pop Warner Football League.
We're at Lowe's Grove Middle School, and this is the home base for the Eagles. But what you're looking at is about 10 teams. They all get in their little pods or their little area, and they practice.
It's an October evening, clear and cool. About 250 miniature football players are spread across this big grass expanse under the lights.
Get them up, get them up, get them up, get them up, get them up.
Get them tight, get them tight, get them tight.
They're age 5 to 12, the tiny mites to the peewees to the midgets. Most are in full gear, helmets, pads, and cleats, except for the littlest ones on the flag team, including Latoya's 6-year-old Jelani. No pads or tackling for them.
Pick it up, come on back, pick it up, come on back. Good job, good job.
And you all are here
3 days a week. Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Every week.
That's not counting the games on Saturdays that can eat up the whole day when you've got two kids to chauffeur around. Latoya's 12-year-old, Gianni, is on a peewee team, the War Eagles.
Yes, are you ready?
Yes, sir!
Are you ready?
Yes, sir!
Ready, begin.
E-A-G-L-E-S.
In the bleachers next to Latoya is her best friend, wearing a SpongeBob shirt.
My name is Andrea Ferrier. Everybody calls me Muffin, like, you know, English Muffin.
We always call each other sisters, so we're Thelma Louise.
Yes.
The good kind, yeah, Christian the good kind.
Yeah, we ain't doing no robberies and nothing like that.
Not this week, sorry.
The reality behind that joke is that both moms could use the money.
Me personally, I don't let my kids know my business as far as my bills or whatever. You know, we don't let them know that, dog, you know, the lights almost got cut out. Because they're children. They should not have to worry about that.
The nonprofit Eagles charge about $150 per kid for a season. And there's a sibling discount for a second child. For Latoya, it's a stretch. For Andrea, well, her 9-year-old son, Saint, played for the Eagles last year and loved it. But then Andrea lost her job.
It does get expensive because you got to pay the entry fee, and then you got to pay for socks and pads and
cleats
and traveling and to pay to get into the games and stuff. And it was just, it would have been way too expensive for me to do this year without a job. So he couldn't come.
Latoya says, including gas money, she spends at least $1,000 for a season of Eagles football for her two sons. So tell me, why do you do it, you know?
For them. And I feel that even though we are single parents, there is nothing in this world that we would not do for our kids. Because, you know, we want them to feel the same or have the same opportunity that the other kids have.
If y'all want to get better, like, y'all gotta listen to what your coach say, and y'all got to go hard in everything y'all do. Even if it's something like...
A couple of older kids have stopped by to watch practice. They're 9th-grade football players from Durham's Hillside High School. One of the Eagles' coaches, Kevin Snow, asks them to give a pep talk to his peewee team.
Do you have any questions for these guys? Anything about football, about how hard school is?
Yeah, is school hard?
Oh, yeah, school is hard, yeah. You can't be slacking on the homework. You can't slack. Especially high school, the teachers, what grade are you only?
Six.
Education comes first. You're a student athlete. Student comes first. So you're a student athlete, so student comes first.
Football is nothing but a magnet to bring the kids in, give us a chance to get in front of the kids, help them to build that base that's going to allow them to make good, strong decisions later on as they move forward in life. I'm Don Jones. I'm the commissioner for the Eagles. This is 22nd year. And
Jones says Eagles coaches preach school almost as much as football and sometimes hold kids out of games for not doing their homework.
The Eagles give awards and even trophies to players who do standout work in school. I asked Jones how many players in the program's long history have gone on to pro football careers.
None have had a career in the NFL. We've had one kid that's actually gotten drafted. He signed as a free agent, Marshall Williams. He spent 1 year with the Colts.
The former Durham Eagle, Marshall Williams, caught no passes during his short stay in the pros. That's the closest to NFL stardom that any former Durham Eagle has come in more than two decades.
You know, we start talking to kids, it's like, you know, hey, after 2,500, 3,000 kids has come through here, and so that just shows you what your odds are of actually getting this, so you got to have more than football.
Al, LaToya, and her friend Andrea are realistic about the odds that their sons will win the football lottery and make big money playing on Sunday afternoons someday.
Sports is not always the option. You know, even though you can play, there are a lot of people out here that can play very well that never made it. You know, so you got to have something else to lean on. You know, you need an education.
They want their kids involved in sports for a lot of the same reasons the Schmidts do, the family of the lacrosse star.
To help with school, build character.
But there is one difference, one reason LaToya gives for getting her kids into sports. It's a reason the Schmidts don't mention in the same way.
And it keeps them away from those gang members and drug dealers. And you know what I'm saying? It gives them another side to look at. You don't always have to, you know, hang out with the big bad boys or something. It gives you something else to see, so...
So the Schmidts, a white, affluent family, are hoping that sports will help their son, Thomas, really thrive in life. LaToya, she wants the same thing for her kids, just in a very different setting. Okay, John, next, back to the Schmidts.
Get it moving!
Thomas Schmidt's high school lacrosse team, the Durham Jordan Falcons, practiced on a cool, cloudy day in March, running a half-field scrimmage. Thomas is watching on crutches. He hoped to lead his team on a run for the state championship in his senior season, but he hurt his knee in a preseason scrimmage. The injury ended his high school career. He sorely misses being out there with his teammates.
It really, like, I'm myself the most when I'm on the lacrosse field. Any troubles that I'm having in the rest of my life, it all just drifts to the back of your mind. You don't have to think about it. And it's where I'm happiest.
The good news is Thomas is expected to recover fully from his injury and to play a lot more lacrosse. See, all that investment of time and money and sweat that Thomas and his parents made in his development as a player, well, it worked. There is no lucrative pro league for lacrosse players. The pinnacle of the sport, really, is that big time or Division I college scholarship. This is Holly, Thomas's mom.
I actually have a photo on my phone of Thomas on the phone with Coach Poley.
We had just flown in from Boston, and we were actually in the RDU airport. And I called Coach Poley, and then he offered me as a 2015.
In February of Thomas's junior year, the head lacrosse coach at Boston University, Ryan Poley, called to offer Thomas a partial scholarship to play at BU. Here's his dad again, Mark Schmidt.
Less than 1% of all high school athletes actually get to play a D1 level sport with any sort of financial contribution from the school, so it's a tremendous honor.
The family also sees the scholarship as a tangible boost to Thomas's future. Like almost all major colleges, Boston University relaxes its academic standards for athletes.
I've always thought of lacrosse as kind of a gateway into a better university. I mean, I wouldn't be able to get into Boston University like without lacrosse. And so it's a big opportunity for me, just because it's a great school.
This was Thomas calling Coach Poley back a couple of days later to accept it, and I had to take a picture of it, and it's one of my favorite pictures ever because Thomas is a pretty quiet, modest kid, and it's sort of a half grin, and you know, he's just happy. It's just I mean, look at that. This is what he's worked for.
John, it's amazing the time and money and effort that Thomas and his parents have put into his sport.
And a big footnote about that, Boston University's offer to Thomas was not for the fall of 2014, after his high school graduation, but for 2015. That means he'll be spending what's called a postgraduate year at a prep school in New York State, honing his lacrosse skills.
And that'll cost his parents tens of thousands of dollars more. So what's the takeaway from Thomas's story?
Well, to me, the point is not that there's anything wrong with the choices that the Schmidts have made. If you have the means to take this kind of journey and help your kid pursue his passion and become the best athlete he or she can be, why not? But obviously, most families can't do what the Schmidts have done.
Yeah, and as youth sports get more and more organized and specialized, kids have to get that expensive training in order to compete for things like college scholarships. A lot of us have this idea that college sports is a great equalizer, a way for kids from all kinds of backgrounds to get help with their education. So, what does this story say about that?
Well, if you just look at the high-profile college sports, football and basketball, it looks like African Americans are getting a wildly disproportionate share of the athletic scholarships. A lot of those kids coming from humble backgrounds, right? But actually, two-thirds of athletic scholarships are in sports that aren't on TV so much. Soccer, baseball, tennis, swimming, golf.
And lacrosse. Sports that are done by mostly white folks and that tend to cost quite a bit of money just to participate at the youth level.
Right. So in fact, white students get 3/4 of all athletic scholarships. And college sports programs are mostly subsidizing families that are already pretty well off.
Coming up, sports used to be a man's world, but that's changed, right? Well, we get to hear how it looks from the perspective of a young woman athlete and fan. That's next on State of the Reunion. Support for State of the Reunion comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, a growing network of listeners, producers, and stations collaborating to make public radio more public. PRX.org.
Maybe it happens this way. Maybe we really belong together. But
that's Lauren Bacall singing in 1944 in her first film, To Have and Have Not. On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to our 1994 interview with Bacall. She died Tuesday at the age of 89. Join us.
Weekday mornings at 11 and again at 7 p.m. on AM 580.
Support for today's broadcast comes from the Friends of WILL and from Urbana's Market at the Square, happening every Saturday morning, rain or shine, from 7 a.m. to noon at the corner of Illinois and Vine Streets in historic downtown Urbana. Learn more at urbanaillinois.us/market.
Welcome back. You're listening to State of the Reunion, and we are in Durham, North Carolina, and we're telling stories about sports, in particular, the role that sports play in the lives of young people. Our guy for this episode is producer John Bewitt, who lives in Durham and teaches at Duke University. So, John, you've been following around a small group of kids and their families through the ups and downs of athletics and life. So tell me what you got next.
Well, I don't know if there's any part of our culture that's more loaded with gender than sports. Think about 100 years ago, sports were all about developing manly men. Women were supposed to watch and cheer or just stay away. That changed a little, and then it changed a lot after the passage of Title IX in the early 70s.
That was the law that required schools and universities to give equal resources to men and women sports programs.
Right. And since Title IX, the percentage of girls and women participating in sports has shot up tenfold. Now just over half of all girls do organized sports at some point, compared to about two-thirds of boys.
So, poof, problem solved. Gender equality in the world of sports.
Right. Well, there's a lot to say about that, but we're looking at the experience of young people here in Durham. So let's go back to Jordan High School. It's March, one of those first really warm, sunny days, and the women's soccer team is starting practice on the school grounds.
All right, guys, we're going to do passing now. I mean, if you want to start.
That is Callie Scher, a senior midfielder, getting her teammates started on a drill. The girls move in a big circle, kicking multiple balls to one another, in some pattern I can't decipher. Callie is focused, intense, and vocal.
Good run, Scotty! Good run!
Callie is probably the spirit of our team. She's a fun player to be around, and she's one of our captains this year.
Mary Napier is the team's assistant coach.
One thing about Callie is she is a little bit shorter, but that does not intimidate her against anybody. Like, without a doubt, she's probably one of our most fierce competitors.
I've played soccer since I was 3 years old. I played ice hockey from when I was 5 until 11 or 12. I played tennis for 3 years. I played basketball for about 8 years. I played baseball, I think, for 2 years when I was younger.
You get the idea. How much of a sports nut is Callie? Scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, 10. I am a 10. I love sports so much. I like everything about sports.
Very important that Duke pressures the basketball.
That includes watching them.
Oh, that was pretty.
On this February night, Callie is on the couch at her friend Amy's house.
This is Amy Wolf.
Hello.
You might have guessed it's one of those basketball games.
The Duke UNC game.
Is that a big deal?
Yes, it's a huge deal. Come on, Coach K, call timeout. I'm wearing a Duke basketball shirt. I changed Lucky Shirts, and it's been helping, knock on wood. Also, my phone case is wood because of Duke basketball, because I knock on wood a lot, and it's just easier to knock on my phone. It's like actual it's actual wood. It's bamboo. Yeah. See, I don't like that women's sports are not watched as much and don't get as much recognition as men's sports, but I play into it. Like, I'm one of those people who watches men's sports more.
Callie is a fan of women's sports, too. She says when she was younger, she and her family went to a lot of Duke women's basketball and soccer games.
I think I just don't now because of time-wise, but if there's a game on, like an important game, or they're playing UNC, especially if they're playing UNC, any women's sport, any sport, we watch it, and like it's a big deal.
She admits she finds men's sports more exciting, especially college basketball. The power, the speed, the dunking. But then we talk about a chicken and egg question. I tell Callie about some numbers I've seen on the sports media. A 20-year study found that TV sports coverage devoted to women actually declined from an already measly 6% around 1990 down to 1.5% of sports news in 2009. So, do the sports media, which of course are run by men, do they hype men's sports because that's what people care about?
Cinderella stories and buzzer beaters. It's going to be awesome, baby.
Or do people care about men's sports because that's what's on?
Media is more wrapped up in men's sports, and especially like Duke men's basketball. Everyone knows who the coach is. Everyone knows the things about the players, like Jabari Parker. And people, even more than college, pay attention to NBA more than WNBA. Like, I don't know more than three people that watch WNBA.
If you wanted to watch the WNBA, would you know where to see it?
I think WNBA is on ESPN sometimes, but I wouldn't know when the games were. I wouldn't know anything about it.
Maybe thanks to the media, a lot of people get the message that women's sports just aren't worth watching. You might think the men's soccer players in Callie's high school would enjoy watching her games. They know the sport and the players, after all. Not so much, she says.
I mean, it bothers me a lot because we go out there and work as hard as them, and we want people to come to our games and support us, but they really do say to our face, like, it's boring, like, we don't want to come watch you.
Callie has noticed another gap between men and women athletes in the media.
The majority of women athletes who are recognized are attractive people, and they're put on magazines with sports bras on for a reason, and they get paid to do it, so they're going to do it.
Callie's right. For years, studies have shown that in the sports media and in advertising, male athletes are usually celebrated for their athletic talents. Women athletes are much more likely to be sexualized, shown in skimpy, non-athletic clothing, dresses, swimsuits, high heels, and so on. A separate study found that highlighting the sexiness of women athletes might draw eyeballs and sell magazines, but it does nothing to increase interest in actual women's sports.
Do you envision having kids someday?
Yes. I will have kids and they will be Duke fans.
That's not where I was going with that question. I wanted to know if Callie has daughters and if they get into sports.
What would be your hope for how they would be recognized as athletes?
I would watch them work hard their whole lives and play the sport that they love for such a long time, and then I would hope that people would know who they were and that they got recognized for the athletes that they were, just like men do.
That seems like a pretty simple wish, and yet...
Well, maybe we'll get there someday.
So, one more place to go in dorm, right?
Yes, we went to a kind of restaurant. Okay, it's a bar on Main Street. Divine's Grill and Sports. And yes, the many screens on the walls show all sports all the time.
But this is public radio, so we just didn't go in for a beer and a game. We asked three thoughtful people to meet us at Divine's for a conversation.
I'm Martina Dunford. Most folk in town would not know that name because everybody seems to call me Coach D.
Martina Dunford used to run rec programs for kids, but then she founded a program for teens who drop out or get suspended from school. It's called New Horizons Character and Leadership Academy.
Dwight Hollier, I am Director of Transition and Clinical Services in the Player Engagement Department with the NFL. I am an eight-year Miami Dolphin veteran, as well as played 1 year with the Indianapolis Colts. And
Dwight Hollier played his college football here at UNC. Finally, another Tar Heel.
So I'm Jan Boxall. I teach at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I teach ethics and sports.
Jan is a philosopher and a former college athlete and coach.
Picking up on our last story, Jan Boxall says Callie's observations were on the money.
We still have the perception, and I ask my class, right? So if you think of athlete, who do you think of or what do you think of? Out of 28 in the class, all but one said, you know, a man. Usually it was Michael Jordan or somebody like that. But, you know, the perception is that athletics is still the man's world. It's the last bastion of male dominance, and they want to retain it. There's a book called The Stronger Women Get, The More Men Love Football, right? Because it feels like that women are intruding on men's territory.
At the same time, Jan suggested patience. In sports culture, history matters.
Look, women's sports has really only been a factor since the override of the veto in 1988.
She's talking about a congressional move that finally settled the fight over Title IX.
So it's really only been since the early 90s that women's sports has really taken the lead. That's only 20-some years ago. You can't undo the 100 years of the other sports. And we had yesterday the Duke-UNC women's basketball game, which was sold out and did have coverage, right? And the same thing when they played at Duke.
I did watch it.
Oh, good.
I watched it on TV. Actually,
Jen knows lots of women athletes who were the first in their families to go to college thanks to athletic scholarships.
A lot of our discussion at Divine's was about the relationship between participation in sports and the overall success of kids as they grow up.
Yeah, I mean, on one hand, Dwight Hollier is sitting right there, and he's that guy, the former star linebacker, the one in a thousand who made it all the way.
I grew up in Hampton, Virginia, and it's known for its athletics. And in our community, it was an extremely positive thing. And because of that, a lot of guys like myself had opportunities to go and extend our education. Now, I had an opportunity to go play in the NFL.
Dwight thinks the lure of sports pulls along lots of kids, not just the few who make the big time.
And I think that helped a lot of guys improve in school, because you had to do a little something in order to be eligible to play. So I didn't have any role models when I came out of school for college. But because somebody told me, you know what, if you work hard, you might be able to get a chance to get a scholarship. That was my light, and that was my opportunity.
Just playing a little bit of devil's advocate,
there's such a small number of people that make it into, you know, to the level that you made it to. So I'm wondering, you know, are we maybe doing a disservice to put emphasis on sports if it's that small of a number? And if not, why not?
I truly don't think it's a disservice because it's an opportunity. Any opportunity is a good opportunity.
That's Martina Dunford. She said it is a problem, though, when sports become just about the only way for kids to earn respect and status.
It hurts the young people who have these high, high hopes and don't have the equipment, the ability, the things that they need to get there. That then becomes, I'm a nobody. So I think it's okay to challenge, to put it out there, but it has to be, this cannot be your only choice.
So, John, here's the hard part of all of this. You know, everybody in our conversation agreed that the deep inequality in society plays out in youth sports as well. And nobody had an easy answer for that.
Yeah, it's a little bit like trying to solve inequality itself around a table at a bar. So the talk came down to, you could say, keeping sports in their proper place. Are sports programs educational, a way to have wholesome fun and build healthy bodies and better people? Or are they a training ground for a multi-billion dollar entertainment industry? And if the answer is both, how's that working out?
The tension is really obvious in debates about college sports. But as we've seen, it affects what goes on in youth sports too, from high school on down.
We have to be very, very careful how we choose our leaders in these sports. So if you are able to take a child and help develop his character and his integrity, that's what I see as being so much more important than developing him to get to a level that's not gonna help him become the productive person he needs to be.
I don't think the intense popularity of sports is gonna wane anytime soon. I mean, right now I'm ordering season tickets, so.
Yeah, I don't see any sign of that happening.
So what does that say about us as a people, as a culture?
Well, it seems like sports just kind of align with a lot of things that Americans cherish and like to see in ourselves, though maybe some of them are contradictory. You know, we tell ourselves that sports are this level playing field, a place of opportunity for all, and a place where people come together. Sports also pick winners, and they make a few people rich and famous.
I think that's what's come through for me in this hour, is that sports don't somehow stand outside of American life, that they're not some trivial sideshow to the real work of building society or working out our divisions and differences.
Yeah, I'd say sports are a pretty good place to look if you want to see how the country really works, for better and for worse.
Yes, sir.
Where do we start from?
Start from the bar now, we're here.
What?
I think it's a good thing. I really do. I think it's great. And it gives them a chance to get out and burn some of that energy off. You know, they get a bath, they eat, and they go to bed. Thank God.
The one thing about sports is there's something for everybody. No matter what body type you are, how big you are, how small you are, you can play a sport.
Squeeze two. Surge three. Hell yeah, four.
So I have to try and get a read of the people in my boat and try and convince them of why we need to go faster and why this is like the competition of a lifetime.
We're playing soccer with my Hispanic people.
It is like a friends. All days people come, different people come to play, you know, like Monday to Friday.
I'm better than you.
Yeah, basically anybody can come and we just play around and have fun.
Yes, we still have millions of Americans who play sports, but actually more hours are now spent watching sports on TV or on the internet than they are actually playing them. And we've become a nation of couch potatoes, and and our appetite for sports on television seems inexhaustible.
And I think 50, 60 years ago, it seemed easier for people to ignore sports if they wanted to. So its presence just seems more oppressive to people in some ways, for people don't like it because it's harder to ignore it or to get away from it.
Our mythical heroes, the Odysseuses and the Agamemnons of our age, are basketball players and football players. They're the people that kids grow up admiring. They're the people whose life stories we know.
We go to sports with the idea that it's going to transcend these kind of social issues, but in another kind of way, sports winds up intensifying them more than transcending them.
Contested was produced by John Bewin of the Center for Documentary Studies at Duke University and edited by Taki Telenidis. The rest of the So True staff is producers Tina Antolini, Delaney Hall, Laura Starcheski, and business manager Bree Burge. You can see photos from this episode and listen to our other episodes at stateoftheunion.com. We're on Twitter, that's at So True. State of the Reunion is presented by WJCT, distributed by PRX and NPR, with major funding provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Al Ledson, and remember, things fall apart.